All right. Latte in hand, ready to roll. Where do we even begin this week? So last week I had three brand new blog posts, which was a bit of a record that I haven't done for a little while. Today, no new blog posts, but a super, super busy cybering data breaching week. Jeez, not even at the weekend yet, which I'll talk about in a moment. So thanks for everyone joining in. I can see all your comments and so on here. As you will note, I have stuck with the mood lighting here in the home office. And oddly enough, because if you're watching last week, I sort of started by going, hey, here's all the, like, the new office stuff. And I started with all the bright lights and everything. And I'm like, yeah, and then I can do this really cool mood lighting thing for when I'm working. And then it actually looked really, really good on the video. And I've done this in more professional capacities, because this is an overly professional, but like more serious meetings since then, and people are just like, oh my God, that looks amazing. So I think I'm sticking with it. Now, incidentally, what I've found is I need like the lighting from the monitors to light my face up. But there's so much freaking screen real estate from the monitors that it actually works pretty well. And g'day to people joining in. G'day, Mike. Nice to have you here, mate, all the way from sunny England. I'm going to come back and talk about some weather stuff in a moment. But I want to make sure that I do tick off the sponsor this week, which is a sponsor that has been there many times before, which is Varonis. Varonis is still talking about Security SWD, their brand new YouTube show about how far can Wi-Fi travel. So Varonis is one of those companies that I have had a very long relationship with, done many online courses and things for. And in fact, they are one of the companies I had a meeting with this week, and I did the lighting thing, and they were like, oh, this was really cool. So good on them for sponsoring, and good on them for liking my lighting as well. Thank you, Varonis. Now, moving on to things. So again, like this week is a little bit, I always have bullet points, right? And there's always stuff that's happened, but less in the way of blog posts and more in the way of casual stuff. So I am going to be having a good look at the comments and things just here as we go along as well. Nothing a strong coffee won't fix. Replying to Burton there. Incidentally, while we're talking about coffee, this was like one of the first things I did when I got my joyful life of independence and moved up here to the Gold Coast, is went and bought a really nice coffee machine and grinder. One of the best investments I reckon I've made for productivity. So, coffee machine, good. all right, so what did I have to talk about today? So I did have a bit of an update, because a few people actually asked me on Twitter. Non-InfoSec related, I have, and this is, in the scheme of all the things that are important in life now, this almost seems frivolous to talk about. But since people are asking, I have cancelled my snow trip. So again, keeping in mind that at least up until really recently, Australia was in a very, very different situation to most of the rest of the world in terms of the COVID-19 situation. Here in our home state, we had about 2 active cases out of 5.1 million people, a bunch more in the southern states, but they're larger states, very different demographics, but still very, very mild. And then what's happened over the last few weeks is Victoria. So that'd be 2 states below us. I think Victoria has about 8.5 million people thereabouts. They've just had an outbreak that has just gone nuts. And it's all this sort of second wave stuff, which we see in various parts of the world. And every time you sort of see, like, we were having, they were getting up into the hundreds of new cases a day. It was a couple of hundred a day, a few hundred a day. Then they had like 500 in one day. And then it came back and it was 300 something. And we're like, oh, maybe we're on top of it now. And then yesterday was 700 something people, 13 deaths, the worst day we've had in Australia for death. And I realize how small that number feels compared to some parts of the world where some of you are from. But for Australia, that was a kick in the guts. And we're seeing outbreaks in New South Wales as well, which is the state beneath us. And the big news that we've got here at the moment is a couple of girls who've come from, looks like they were in Melbourne, and that the news has since come out. They're in Melbourne. They got into a bunch of trouble there for organising a party. So they're in like COVID-19 hotspot. They organise a party, 19-year-old girls. And it sounds like there was about $30,000 worth of fines handed out to people there. Anyway, they've gone to Sydney and then they've lied on their border declaration to get back into Queensland. So allegedly, it's just what's in the news. They've come into Queensland, they've been in the community for like 8 days, one was a cleaner at a school, and they've tested positive. So lying on border declarations, going down there, you know, somewhere that's a hotspot in the first place, then coming back into a state which was pretty much unscathed until the moment. So apparently they're now under criminal investigation, facing jail time. And then the news today is, allegedly, they're organized in some organized crime gang, or they're involved in some organized crime gang where they steal handbags and then sell them at a premium. And one of them is apparently being uncooperative with police in terms of actually disclosing where she's been so they can figure out who might actually die as a result of this. So that's her big news at the moment. But I guess the overarching theme here is that going from the southern state upwards down in Victoria, it's turned into an absolute bloody mess. New South Wales is having outbreaks everywhere. Just today, I've seen that the ski field next to the one I was going to go to has now been declared a hotspot because they found COVID-19 in the sewage system. So that's a bit of a mess. And of course, that's starting to seep into our state as well. So we have to see what happens now when they do all the contact tracing of the people that these girls have come into contact with. So definitely no snow for me, and that was a really hard decision to make because there was no snow for me last year because of loads of reasons. Have a read of my pinned tweet for a sense of that. So that was a bit disappointing for the kids as well. Disappointing also that, unfortunately, I paid for the accommodation, which I booked in January before the world was crazy. No refund. So you don't get a refund. You don't even get a credit for next year. Unless either all of New South Wales is closing its borders or Thredbo, where I was going to go, gets declared a hotspot. And I don't want it to, but at the moment there's unfortunately accommodation I've literally had to give away to a friend who's in a more convenient situation, shall we say, to go there. So it's a little bit upsetting, but by the same token, it's like, look, most Australians actually want to come here where I live for a holiday. So if I have to go to the beach or sit outside and enjoy myself, it's not too bad. But there's this sunk cost problem. If you've never heard of the sunk cost fallacy in economics, it's really, really interesting, where basically people latch onto something that they've spent money on, whether it's a good idea or not. And it simply wasn't a good idea to go to the snow. Whether I go or don't go, I've already paid for the accommodation. So here I am. All right, let me have a look. Comments over here. that went off on another tangent while I was talking there. 30 degrees in England today, mate. And I know what happens in England when it gets to 30 degrees. You guys absolutely lose your minds and the train stop. I remember being in London one time when it'd been like high 20s and they're like people outside tube stations handing out bottles of water and like, oh, be careful, it's hot down there. So, now, in fairness, having said that, It's one of those things where it's a little bit like other parts of the world that are used to being cold and everything's made for being cold. I think the hottest I have been in memory since childhood was actually in Oslo in the middle of last year, just because there was like a 30-degree day and the houses aren't built for it. The houses are made to get warm. Conversely, people come from overseas here and during the winter they're like, you know, it'll be 22 degrees or something during the day. What are we now? 18, but it's not even 9 a.m. yet. And then they get up first thing in the morning and it's 16 degrees or something outside. And they're like, wow, this house is so cold because we just don't heat the places during the night. So it's all relative, I guess. Burton, I saw the video you shared of a policeman getting abused by a driver, which is bad. So, and I'm sure this is happening in other parts of the world as well, but the behavior of some people around this pandemic is just absolutely ridiculous. So there is obviously, can we call them anti-vaxxers? They're probably anti-vaxxers as well. Conspiracy theorists, flat earthers, people who think extended validation works. We're all in the same bucket. Anyway, so there's just this like subculture of people that are convinced that all of this is conspiracy and that you do not need masks and that they, I think there's some term being used at the moment. It's like global citizens or something, like you're not actually subject to the laws of the country that you live in. And people just expecting to do whatever the hell they want, and everyone has just got to fit in around them. And the video that Burton was talking about, it's somewhere in my tweet timeline, I shared it because the cop was just awesome, where some truckie has just like obviously just blast through a border control line because we do have strict inspection on the border. Cops obviously had to chase him down, has caught up with him. And the guy in the truck, and this is what tends to happen, like these conspiracy theorists are videoing themselves and they put it online where they look like complete wankers. So why they're doing it, I don't know. But anyway, this truckie, he's videoing the cop and the cop is saying, you know, look, I need you to provide ID because inevitably he's trying to figure out who this guy is and if he should be crossing borders. And the guy at some point, he gets to the point where he's like, you know, am I a man? Am I a man? It's like, oh, there's a weird line of questioning. And the cop's like, what do you identify as, mate? It's 2020. I was just like, that is an epically woke in tune with the current day response, which diffused things quite nicely. Anyway, there's another video beneath that. I don't know if you saw it, Burton, where it looks like this officer's senior then comes along and they basically arrest the guy. And they're very, very cool about it. But just to have people like that. And the other one that's made a lot of news here in Australia is that there's a lady who's walked into a Bunnings, which is Bunnings is a big hardware store chain here in Australia. Like you walk into a Bunnings and it feels like a freaking stadium full of everything. And down in Victoria, masks as of today are mandatory everywhere in Victoria. And they obviously just when you go outside, and they were mandatory in certain places, I think for the last couple of weeks, 10 days, something like that. So this woman's walked into a Bunnings, filming again, convinced she doesn't have to wear it. And she's just been an absolute pain in the ass to the staff, who are super, super polite and frankly put up with way more shit than what they should have to. And that's gone super viral as well, which is probably the wrong word to use under the circumstances. It's been very popular, the video. And we just keep seeing this thing popping up again and again and again. And look, the free speech is great, but geez. Anyway, we could really go down a rabbit hole there, and I'm sure that you've all got many, many examples from other parts of the world as well. just what really a comment here. Nickard says from Oslo here, back in June, I had to put tinfoil on my windows to keep the heat out, and it was only just above 30 degrees. And it's funny actually, because the recollection that I have of being that hot was when I was probably like 12 years old at my grandparents in country Victoria in Australia, when it would have been like a 40 degree days and you've just got like a stand up fan blowing air. We didn't have air conditioning back then, certainly not at their place. But yeah, isn't it odd? Oslo was the place I was hottest. All right, moving on. So breaches. Holy cow, have there been a lot of breaches this week? So I'm just going to go through the Have I Been Pwned list of new incidents, but just to sort of put stuff in context, what's happened here? We've got this threat actor. Am I quoting this for anyone listening? Threat actor identified as Shiny Hunters, who he or she or they or collective or whatever it is, has just been super, super effective at breaking in and stealing large amounts of data. Now, a lot of this went up for sale, as it often does initially, and then it's just all been dumped really rapidly after that. And we're talking about a double-digit number of breaches. It seems to be around about the 14 number, and I'm not entirely sure how many of them are related to this one actor versus from other places as well, but it's just a heap of stuff that's appeared at once. And I've had a number of different parties jumping up and saying, look, here is, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 different breaches at a time. So if I go back through the list just from the last week. So in fact, if we go back a week and one, there was the Wattpad data breach. Now this was 270 million records. This is one of the top 10 largest breaches ever in Have I Been Pwned. In fact, it's the second largest breach of a discrete website. Now what I mean by that is one website that had a breach and had that many people in it. It wasn't just like a credential stuffing list. So the largest one is still MySpace. This one was massive, 270 million. Now that apparently also came from this actor who was allegedly selling it for $100,000 as well. So that's that's a good earn if they ever got that money. So stuff that's happened after that, promo. So promo is for creating marketing videos. Now they had 22 million records, Salted SHA-256 password hashes, which incidentally are very, very close to useless in terms of the cryptographic protection they provide. 68% of those already have been pwned. After that, Dave. there is a financial app called Dave, a digital banking app. 7.5 million from those. 77% of those already have been pwned. A Brazilian travel agency called Herb. 20 million accounts. MD5, unsalted MD5 passwords. 50% of those already have been pwned. Inevitably, a Brazilian website is a little bit left of the normal demographic and have been pwned, but 50% still already in there. So that was a lot. What else? Drizzly. I'd never heard of Drizzly. Drizzly seems to rhyme with grizzly. So they have a grizzly bear there, which is an alcohol delivery service. Seems to be predominantly US-based. 2.5 million email, IP, and physical addresses. Bcrypt password hashes. I am seeing a lot of Bcrypt these days. Almost always Bcrypt work factor 10 as well, for those interested in the strength of the chosen Bcrypt. 81% of those are in Have I Been Pwned? And then, what, a couple of days ago now, the Indian delivery service called Dunzo, that was actually breached last year, 3.5 million unique email addresses, no passwords, they just do OTPs via SMS by the look of it, so there's phone numbers in there. And then we had Chatbooks. So Chatbooks, what was that, a printing service? So apparently, you can print your photos and things in a nice book. 2.5 million records there. Salted SHA-5 12 password hashes. Again, a very bad choice for password storage today. Then an online fragrance service called Scentbird. Never heard of those guys before. 5.8 million records there. I put those in 22 hours ago. Bcrypt again, which is something. 85% of them already pwned, which is quite a large number. And then the last one I've loaded here is a service called Appen, which is an AI training company. 5.9 million records from them. Also Bcrypt hashes, 60% of those, and Have I Been Pwned. So I think every single one of those result sets, at least half of the records had already been Have I Been Pwned. There's quite a bit of Bcrypt, but also really terrible things that range from salted SHA-512 for password storage all the way through to unsalted MD5, which is just crazy. So I still have, and I can't say what they are because I haven't actually verified them yet, and I don't want to go making assumptions about this before they're verified. But as part of that whole list of different things from different parties, I've got, let's say, one party here has sent me six other ones that I've still got to deal with, and I'm getting through about two or three a day. So they're those, and then this is the other party that's been sending me stuff. There's another five there. So, yeah, there's a good 11 of these breaches still to go. And every one of these files is around about the 1 gigabyte compressed with the data as well. So there is just a massive flood of information at the moment. Now, let me just have a read of the comments here, see if I missed anything in particular here. And then I'm going to talk about Blackboard as well, because Blackboard has been a mess too. In fact, I must remember to put that in my links down here. Let me see what else we got here in the comments. Well, these went through pretty quickly while I was talking. Mike's in a second lockdown. Yeah, and I know the UK always got a bit more of a mess as well, unfortunately. Bunnings Karen. I tell you, if you want to see that Bunnings incident, just Google Bunnings Karen, and then there's a whole other discussion about why she's called Karen. So anyway, that's a bit of a mess. Maybe I just won't read some of these out. As Fozzie said, to be honest, if it's MD5, it still doesn't matter if it's salted. Yeah, and to be honest, if it's SHA-512, it doesn't matter if it's salted as well. Every time you read stats from people that are serious password crackers, people like Jeremiah Gosney is a good example, and you look at the speed of MD5 versus the speed of something like SHA-512, yeah, there's a factor of maybe 25 in there, you know, 25 times longer to calculate an MD5 hash rather than a SHA-512. 25 the difference. And then you look at the difference between, say, MD5 and Bcrypt Work Factor 10, and it's something like 50 million. So there's a very, very small gap between those traditional hashing algorithms, which weren't really meant for password storage, and an algorithm like MD5, or rather Bcrypt, with a reasonable work factor. So very, very different story. Now, mind you, it does also beg the question for something like Herb with those unsalted MD5s, how many organizations are there sitting here right now with your credentials stored in MD5? Right now, knowing that MD5 or any of the SHA variants, knowing that they're a total heap of shit, salted or non-salted, yet the data is still sitting there. Because it's going to take effort to move it into Bcrypt or something. There's a heap of them. And if you spin through Have I Been Pwned, I'm sure that you'll see at least half of the breaches that have gone in this year have been one of those terrible, terrible password storage mechanisms. All right, other question here. Burton, I have been extremely busy, mate. And I'm going to talk about all the PC stuff in a moment as well, because there's an epic thread on Hacker News I want to discuss, because a lot of crazy things in there. All right, Blackboard. So Blackboard, I tweeted about yesterday as well. And Blackboard is a platform that looks like a cloud hosting provider, but also some CRM style stuff used by many, many different other organizations. Now, I'm actually going to find what I said here in the tweet, just so that I get my facts right. I've had, look, normally after there's a breach notification go out for a service, a lot of people pop up and they say, hey, Troy, I just got this breach notification. You know, maybe you should see it. And very often it's news to me as well. And what's been interesting with Blackboard is there's just been a lot of different people getting a lot of different breach notifications from different services, all popping up within a window of about 24 hours and going, hey, I just got this. Now, I'd commented on Blackboard the other day, and when I commented on them, I referred to their disclosure notice. And in the disclosure notice, what appears to have happened is I've been ransomware. Okay, not good. Ransomware will lock up the files. It will make them inaccessible. But it also appears to be one of these ransomware strains where not only do they lock up the files, but they take a backup of them for you as well. Now, of course, it's less about taking the backup in order to then give you the backup later on. It's more about the fact that now we've got a problem not just of loss of data, but also a problem with confidentiality. So they've got a copy of the data. But I'm reading this Blackboard statement here, and they're talking about it's all cyber criminals, and I'll come back to their wording in a moment. But they've got a section here where they say, this is Blackboard, because protecting our customers' data is our top priority, we paid the cyber criminals' demand with confirmation that the copy they removed had been destroyed. Job done. They're happy then. Now, there's two very worrying things in this. One is paying anyone operating a ransomware campaign. And I'm sympathetic up to a degree. And the degree is, imagine, you know that saying, there but for the grace of God go I. Like, imagine it's one of us sitting there in our organization. Our organization's just been ransomed. Someone is saying, pay this many Bitcoin and we'll give you the magic key to unlock it. And very often the key does unlock it and you do get your data back. And someone's sitting there doing the ROI, which inevitably comes back to, do we actually have this data anywhere in a readable format which we can recover from? How long will it take? What will it cost us? What is our cost of loss of availability whilst everything is down? And they're crunching the numbers, and then there's this little thing sitting on their shoulder going, yeah, but don't pay the ransom, don't pay the ransom, don't pay the ransom, because they're criminals. And then on the other shoulder, they're like, I've got to get the business back up and running. The return on investment of spending this money is actually really good. So I'm sympathetic to the position that it leaves people in. But of course, by paying the ransom, you do create a market for it as well. And ransomware was particularly active a couple of years ago, and it just seems to have had a resurgence recently. So obviously, there is money to be made. The bit, though, about paying a ransom to use their words, cyber criminals, and then being convinced that they have removed their copy of the data just does not fly at all. People who are literally criminal by the legal definition, and they're saying, give us money for the data, I would have absolutely no confidence whatsoever that they've actually removed the data. And of course, there's no way of actually independently verifying that either. I mean, what are you going to do? Like, you imagine this is like a directory listing. Here's all your data. And then they have a little video of someone going in there and deleting the data. And they're like, da-da, job done. So, well, what about the backups? So that doesn't read well. Now, when we go through and then have a look at all the breach disclosure notifications, we've got the Boy Scouts in the US. We've got it's in Gaelic or something, which I can't pronounce. Let's say it's a university in the UK. We've got another one here, University of Hull. We've got Robert Gordon's. That's another university, I believe. A lot of universities seem to be on there. Robert Gordon's College. We have got Heriot Watt University as well. These are just the ones that were sent to me. And then you sort of pick apart the disclosure notice a bit more, and the language used is just absolute crap. So two things here. There are basically three parts to their disclosure notice. The first part is just all about how big a problem cybercrime is. So here, I'll read it. And I highlighted the bits here, which are the ones which are really deflection from blame and responsibility for Blackboard to all the other kids are getting hacked as well. So they say, the cybercrime industry represents over one... Geez, start that again. Take two. The cybercrime industry represents an over $1 trillion industry that is ever-changing and growing all the time, a threat to all companies around the world. Like many in our industry, not just us, everyone's getting pwned, Blackboard encounters millions of attacks each month, and our expert cybersecurity team successfully defends against those attacks, apparently not all of them, while constantly studying the landscape to stay ahead of this sophisticated criminal industry. You got to remember this. It's only bad guys who do this. It's the bad guys. It's the bad guys' fault. We wanted to notify our customers and other stakeholders about a particular security incident that recently occurred. So that the language that they use throughout this is like, cyber criminals, hacking everywhere, we're just a victim just like everyone else. To some extent they are, but you can see there's an obvious attempt to deflect blame here. And then they go through what actually happened, which was relatively reasonable. But the closing paragraph here is all about how awesome their cybersecurity are. And if I just pick the highlighted bits here, they have a substantial cybersecurity practice. They have a dedicated team of professionals. They exceed benchmarks for both financial and technology sectors. They follow industry standard best practices. They have ongoing risk assessments, aggressively test the security of our solutions and continuously assess our infrastructure. They have various cybersecurity thought leadership organizations. They team up with other experts to share best practices and tactical threat information for the cybersecurity community. And they believe the strength of our cybersecurity practice and advanced planning is the reason we were able to shut down the sophisticated ransomware attack. So it's like eight different things within a short paragraph about how awesome they are. By the way, we got pwned. And it just feels like that. Fortunately, that the paragraph in the middle of all this does actually have an apology in it, but it just feels like really trying to deflect blame off to evil cyber hackers. So I don't think that was a particularly good way of expressing things. Yeah. I'm looking at the comments here, Burton. My V2 of the office is a very productive setup. Yes, and I'm going to talk about that in detail in just a moment. Doesn't matter if anything is salted. All new leaks work by getting the source code of the site, which includes salt. Well, strictly speaking, the source code of the site doesn't include the salt. The database includes the salt, which is in there, and then the salt is disclosed with the hashes. And then people say, well, why do you store the salt with the hashes? Well, because the application needs to be able to retrieve the salts so that it can add it to the password and then hash it when people log in. Now, if you've got something like bcrypt, which works so slow compared to MD5, then you have a high degree of resilience. If you've got MD5, then you don't. Okay, what else we got here? I don't get it. Bcrypt was released well before these newer SHA variants, yet SHA continues to be used. How do these big companies get away with hashing them in these algorithms? Well, first of all, I think the answer to how they get away with it is there's nothing to stop them other than if they get breached, then they don't look so good. But there's no, I think even within PCI, there's no strict legislation about which hashing algorithms are acceptable. Someone can tell me if I'm wrong about that. So I think there's a couple of things. There's definitely complacency. And one of the things to remember with password hashing algorithms, there is only any benefit gained from the hashing algorithm after something else goes fundamentally wrong. Bcrypt, MD5, plain text, none of them matter unless you have a SQL injection vulnerability or a publicly exposed database or a backup somewhere in the /backups folder of your website. None of these things matter until something else goes fundamentally wrong. And I think that there's often a view of, well, we'll just make sure the other things don't go wrong, which, of course, doesn't always happen. The other thing is that if I think about even back to, say, 2012, Visual Studio 2012 had the ASP.NET membership provider, which was salted SHA-1, which was a terrible way of storing passwords even then. And that was sort of the very, very end of that generation of password storage. But how many systems got built then that we still use either as they are today or they've been iterated on in terms of the front end, but the underlying database is pretty much the same thing. So there's a long, long lead time between deciding that a technology is no longer suitable and actually getting rid of all the stuff that's still using it. The amount of VBulletin that's out there that's still just old versions from years gone by that people haven't patched, or it's not just patching either. These are major upgrades to move from underlying password storage schemas as well. Now, I'm not trying to make excuses for organizations. I'm just saying this is why stuff doesn't move quickly. I wrote a blog post back in, I think it was 2012, called "Our Password Hashing Has No Close." When was it? Because this was, to me, this was like when the penny dropped for me. Troy Hunt, no close. Google that, everything will be fine. Especially it works. June 26, 2012. And I just went through with a fast GPU of the day and went, look, this is how fast it is to, you know, crack even SHA-1. So anyway, so that, we should well and truly be past that. Incidentally, it's probably a good time, too, to be thinking about the Auth0 zeros of the world or the Azure Active Directories or the places where they will do the storage for you, and it's never your problem. You've got different issues to deal with, but the way you store passwords is no longer one of them. Okay, someone said, when do you think Vinny Troy will be investigated? There is a tremendous amount of proof against him. I don't know. I am not up to speed with that. I know that there's always controversy in cyber, and he did actually send me a copy of his book, which I must read as well. So I don't know, but I know that there is a lot of odd behavior, not necessarily from Vinny, but other people around as well. So anyway, I think that needs to be a good Krebs story one day. And I think Krebs did do a story related to Vinny once as well. All right, so let me move on. I want to talk about my setup with the office and everything and the camera and the PC. And I thought the most fun way to do it is to read the comments on Hacker News. Holy shit. Strap yourself in for this. So I've had enormously positive feedback about this setup. And I will preface all of this by saying I love this environment. I love sitting here in this space, looking around at all these screens, using this camera, the feedback from people I get when I sit, you know, drop into a teleconference or something and they're like, holy cow, like why do, sounds really bad. Why do you look so good, Troy? Well, it's the camera. Like this is the thing and all the bokeh in the background and the lighting and everything. I'm really, really super happy with the feedback and I just like using the setup. But because it's the internet, not everybody is happy. So someone pointed me to a Hacker News thread, and I'm going to drag this over here nice and central while I read it for everyone. There are many, many, many things that are wrong with this, and I'm just going to pick some of these and try and walk through it because it will help explain some of my thinking. So and you know what I'll do? I'll drop this in the comments. So if anyone actually wants to follow along at home, this is what I'm going to read through. I just dropped it there into the chat in YouTube. So someone says, I kept on scrolling, waiting for the price tag on this, and it was never listed. Let's see. All prices are USD. Now, I never listed the prices because I don't know exactly what I spent on everything. I literally just bought the things that made sense over a period of time, and they are things where, as I explained in the blog post, will last for many, many, many years. The PC I got 8 years out of. The monitors I got a decade out of. The chair, still going. Desk, still going. So a lot of this stuff, I don't really care too much about spending the money for things that will last and I'll get a return on. And I'm sure I made the point in the blog post about return on investment. Regardless, if I spin through this and I look at some of the assumptions I've made, the Rode Broadcaster mic, $420. Now, keep in mind, US dollars, we've got a multiple, we're about 72 cents on the dollar at the moment. So, you know, you got to take about another, if we were to put this in Oz, let's just make it simple. What's 400 USD in AUD? To be $555. Rode Broadcaster mic, yeah, it's about that. Incidentally, like most of what I do professionally depends on this thing working, so that's kind of important. Lenovo ThinkStation price was just under $4,000. It was a lot more than that. I'll tell you that much, even with my discount. 49-inch monitor, $2,000 US. It was a lot less than that. It was less than $2,000 Australian. I remember that much. The 232-inch monitors, 2x540. It was a lot less than that. The Ergotron monitor arms, 280 to 310 US. I think it was about that for the big one. And the small ones, about 165 US, probably about that. The Sony camera, 1100. I think it was less than that. The lens, 640, about that. The Cam Link list for 130, high demand. Yeah, I paid at least double that. Modular rigging system, can't even remember. Fingerprint reader, 140, I think it was more than that. Stream Deck, 150, about that. Mouse, $100. This person's dedicated. Wow, they're really, really interested, aren't they? And it goes on and on and on, eating stuff. I'm getting around 10,004 for this setup, plus whatever stung for that Cam Link. I think it was more than that. I'm just not really sure of the point here. Like, would you really like to know local Australian pricing and then what discounts I got from Lenovo? And it's just keyboard warriors stuff. And while I go through this, I will have a look at some of the comments here. So Fozzie's noticed someone in here has said, has justified me having this set up because he, being me, does blogging and stuff, which is interesting. We'll get to that. Someone here says, I grabbed an old cardboard box and used it to convert my sitting desk into a standing desk. Okay, good on you. That's fine. Someone else, I guess it's okay for Troy Hunt. Not for us mere mortals. He runs Have I Been Pwned and is a content creator in various capacities. I think I'm a mere mortal, but the other bit about the things I do, yep, that's fair enough. Someone, sounds expensive, but how much does the average salesman spend on their car to look the part, or a banker on their suits, or a founder on their bicycle? Seems a reasonable expense, reflects Troy's commitment to IT, encourage people to take him seriously and eventually pay him more. Now, I think this is sort of heading in the right direction, which again comes back to the return on investment. And one of the things that struck me when I was reading this, because a bunch of people going, you could have done this for less money. There's a couple of things. First of all, what the people commenting on here do with their pocket money is up to them. Second of all, if you were to sort of look at it from the perspective of taking what disposable income you have to spend on equipment and then looking at what the return you get on that is, it's very, very easy to make stuff like this make sense when your livelihood depends on it, and when you get a very, very long lifetime out of it as well. Now, what else is in here that was relevant? Most of the cost is the laptop and the big monitor. Yeah, newsflash, there's no laptop, mate. It's a desktop. So it's not that. What else is in here? This is all pre-tax income since it's deductible. So this is true. So I can pay this with the gross proceeds that I then earn by a result of using this equipment. So there's a really big difference to going out and spending, say, $1,000 on something that I can pay for with pre-tax dollars versus post-tax dollars. In Australia, depending on where your tax rates are, you're giving away up to about 50% of your income. So that's the difference between paying something that literally is $1,000 that you earn versus almost $2,000 that you earn, because once you pay the tax, what do you got left? So put that in perspective. Someone here, I'm an artist living close to the poverty line. So far seems relevant. I know absolutely nothing about how business deductions work. He still had $10,400 of cash on credit handover all at once in the middle of this pile of hardware, right? That sounds pretty real to me. He mostly linked to manufacturer pages. I did not feel like spending the time to see if there are better deals out there. Yeah, because you're in a different part of the world to me, almost certainly, because this is a very, very US-centric thread because of the number of times they say US in here. I'm fairly certain he's self-employed, has a business, and Australia is different. Bloody hell, it's different. Mate, it's more expensive than the US. That's what it is. Honest question. What does this guy do that makes any of this even remotely necessary? All right, how long we got? I mean, other than all of the things which I actually mentioned in the blog post, high-end PC with large amounts of RAM. I do a huge amount of crunching of data in SQL servers that I run locally. Things like Pwn passwords I keep locally. There are loads of reasons why I don't put that on the cloud. I have a blog post which will explain that another time. I do a lot of rendering of video. Then in terms of the number of things that I multitask on, these screens make a hell of a big difference, because I'm going from data breaches to various webinars and things and presentations I'm planning, through to doing this stuff, through to writing blog posts. As I look around me at the moment, I've got SQL Server Management Studio running there because I've been doing stuff and have I been Pwn. I've got NordVPN over there because I've been VPNing out as I do some of these things. I've got the Microsoft Azure Storage Explorer there because I've been uploading some breaches. I've got OneNote here with everything we're talking about. One Chrome window, two Chrome window. What the hell is this thing? Oh, that's Windows Explorer. Then I've got Visual Studio Code over there because I'm in the middle of doing IoT stuff for my home assistant network. More Chrome. Spotify's over there. I probably have too many Chrome windows. And then if I look down at my taskbar, there's all sorts of other things running. I've got PowerShell windows here. I've got Adobe Illustrator because I've been editing logos. What else? Oh, and I got Photoshop running too, because also logos. And the joy of this machine is that it's just ticking along. And if I have a look at my process utilization at the moment, I'm using 15% of my CPU, 24% of my memory. Now, if I look at memory, I'm sure it's going to be Chrome. Yes, Chrome. Chrome's using the vast majority of the memory, even more than bloody Illustrator, for God's sake. But the point is that I can do all of this stuff with a machine of this spec. So that's why it's remotely necessary, because it means that I'm not having to shut stuff down and start new stuff and continually sort of power down and power back up. I mean, it's good for him and all, but it just seems like a post about a guy who likes fancy toys getting fancy toys. Oh, incidentally, I like fancy toys. Everyone likes fancy toys. Whoever pops up and goes, you know what I really don't like? I really don't like fancy toys. Like, you're in the wrong industry, mate, if that's you. So let me just have a look at some of the comments here. Take a step down off my high horse just for a moment. Someone here says, I think I spent about the same as Troy. My setup must be a Queenslander thing. And again, keeping in mind that the vast majority of this stuff lasted 8 years plus. If you spread this money out over an eight-year period and then you compare that to what it allows me to earn, it's just not even worth discussing. Someone else says, I spent $400 on Lego bricks to build my Lego as a mosaic for my video background. No fancy bokeh for me. I like that. That's good. People tend to spend more just for a maxed out Mac these days. Yeah, I mean, start adding stuff to a Mac and see how expensive that gets. Holy cow. I'm just trying to find something that's still on topic here. This is off topic, but relevant. Less heated question, where do you get your watch strap from? So this watch strap is I've got to put it near my face so it's in focus. It's a UAG watch strap. And the reason I got this is because it's Velcro, like the Apple ones. But unlike the Apple ones, it doesn't come off when you hit the water hard. So what I was finding is I'd go wakeboarding, and there are a number of times where I'd crash and the Apple one would be like this and it would just be hanging on my wrist. And I was like, I'm going to lose a watch doing this, or I have to take the watch off. And then that was kind of annoying for other reasons. So this one's super cool and it's got a real sort of metal clasp on it. So the UAG, if you Google UAG Apple Watch strap, these are great. And I've had this for probably about a year and it's still never, ever, ever even come close to coming off. Touch wood. Why do you have your taskbar on all screens? So I didn't used to have my taskbar on all screens when I had the four monitors before. It's a Windows default to have them there, and I just haven't turned it off. And I'm probably 50-50 on whether it's a good idea. What I do like is that, like, this is my primary screen. My Windows icon and the start menu is down about there. Now, if I'm looking over there, I want to sort of be able to jump straight back into programs without necessarily going all the way back to there. So far, I'm kind of a little bit on the side of it's better rather than worse, but, you know, each their own. It's fine. Have you tried our Lord and Savior Firefox? I do run Firefox. In fact, I reinstalled it just the other day on this machine. I just normally use Chrome. There are all sorts of reasons for that. Why does this guy need dual Xeons, 120 gigabytes of RAM, 900 watt power supply from his site? It looks like he just does PowerPoints and video conferences. I do a lot of PowerPoints and video conferences. I do. But we'll get back to the other things. This is also at home, so you're not paying $380 square meter for rent. That's based on Gold Coast prices. Yeah, I mean, it is a home office. There are some legitimate business deductions by having a home office. So I'm able to actually claim some of those back, which is perfectly okay here, because this is literally the place I work from and where I earn the money, a portion of my cleaning bill, a portion of my electricity bill. These things are legitimate deductions for a home office in Australia. As Burton says, I bought a I thought you said 700-pound camera. No, he said 7,000-pound camera plus lens for a hobby. Then again, I buy nice cars for a hobby, so what can I say? Carl, did you have any trouble syncing audio and video with your setup? No. So they're syncing just fine. There's just one as a video input, one as an audio input. They're both coming in without any lag on either, and they're fine. What I did notice is when I was running 4K out of the camera, there'd be a bit of lag on video. So at the moment, I can see myself in the lens, or the screen just above the camera, and I can also see myself on the YouTube live screen just here, and everything is perfectly synced. When it was 4K, I could see, let's call it 100 milliseconds delay, enough that you could see it, but not enough to really be terrible. But that delay also seemed to affect the audio, and the lips were just slightly out. But you really don't need 4K. What I did do is I changed from, for a while there, I went to 30 hertz on the video stream from the camera. I've gone back to 60 because someone did actually notice it. And 60 seems fine. That bit rate still fits through our pipes here in Australia. Would you recommend Brave Browser? Look, I've tried Brave. I've run it for a while. They've got an interesting monetization model. I have signed up all of my assets to receive BAT, the browser awareness tokens, as well. I think some of the privacy things on there just make life a little bit hard at times. And Chrome is a very, very good browser with very, very smart people behind it. And there are some downsides in terms of if you're a little bit worried about the privacy or tracking. But then I have run things like a Pi Hole as well. So I kind of feel that balances out. All righty. So I'm going to keep going. going back to Hacker News, because there's other bits of gold in here. I almost feel like this is one of these reading mean tweets things. Holy crap, I've got some mean tweets. I should do that one day. It may seem like flexing to you, but to me, it's a carefully thought out business decision. Yeah, like that is literally it. And I made the point in the blog post when it came to things like speccing the machine. I think all of us, whenever we spec a machine or a monitor or a camera or a phone, we're doing this kind of mental arithmetic of how far do I slide the little mental slidey bar towards more money, more features? Where is my point of, where's my tolerance? And look, I could have slid it a hell of a lot further, certainly on the spec of the machine. You know, I mean, geez, go to Lenovo website, start specing it out. Go to a bigger one of these. I could have specced faster CPUs, faster GPUs, more RAM, more disks, all sorts of things I could have specced. I just slid it to the point where the ROI was just in that sweet spot for me. I think you sort of get to like law of diminishing returns after a while, where you got to start paying a lot more money to get smaller amounts of performance. All right. Someone here says, when you spend 15 hours a day in front of a computer, you want the best experience for yourself. It's the one place where I'm totally happy to be a bit extravagant rather than fancy clothes, cars, home location, etc. I was about to say, yes, I understand this because look at what I wear. It's like black t-shirts and jeans. I do spend more on cars and homes because that is where I live and I just love cars. But there's a lot of truth here, which is this is where I spend a huge amount of my time. And particularly given, let's face it, the future, I mean, my laptop, I carry it upstairs and downstairs and that's about it, but it's not going to be going on airplanes. It's not traveling interstate. It's definitely not traveling overseas for the foreseeable future. And in my mind, it's going to be at least a year. This is where I'm going to be every single day. So this is what I live with. What else we got in here that's interesting? Someone says, so I've started out making a comment about, in the blog post, I was going to make a comment about people only being as good as their tools, and someone's made a point here. I've always felt you're only as good as you are when your tools are taken away. Someone else says, I think it's bad to let your tools become a crutch to avoid gaining a deeper understanding. All right, so try and do what I do with just Notepad. Go back to Notepad and a basic machine. Even just as a software developer, just go back to Notepad. Notepad sucks. This is not a good experience. This is not a productive experience. This is why people spend money on IDEs and why they spend money on ReSharper and faster machines and things like this. So I think a much fairer comment here is you're only as good as what's a good way to put it? You're only as good as what you are if you can effectively use the tools at your disposal. And I'm sure that people can use a lot of these a lot better than me, but what I do know is that I'm more effective with good tools than not with good tools. Everyone is. Like, no one's ever going to go, I have the choice to either work with Notepad and a shitty old computer or with a nice modern computer and a nice modern IDE. It's like, what are you going to do? This is just an absolutely ridiculous comment. Someone's made the comment, video editing and streaming were the main things that drive this hardware. It's not the main thing. So that's what's the main thing that's driven the camera and the lighting. Now, remember, most of the lighting here, although that's not turned on now, I bought years ago anyway, and it's just the two little Philips Hues and the big screens lighting me up now. So there's that. You know, there's some personal preference stuff here, which is fine. So there's a comment made earlier on. So this bloke here, Bobcat, it says he does blogging and stuff. So this seems like a combination of unboxing. I didn't do any unboxing shots. Business expense tax deduction, true. And simple, expensive toys. They're not really simple. An honest setup as opposed to my dishonest setup could be had for much less. I think you could save quite a bit in this PC. Yes, with custom build, read the bloody blog post. The point was, I don't have the time to go and do that. I want the warranty. I want to be able to just like literally ship it to someone if something goes wrong and they fix it. And I explain why in the blog post. Screens by going smaller, yeah, that'd be boring. This looks epic. It doesn't make any sense. Camera by going 1080p instead of 4K. Look, if the argument the guy is making is I could have spent less money, yes, and I could have spent more money, and I found this sweet spot. And as I said, what he does with his pocket money is up to him. All right, looking at some of the comments for a bit. Burton, what's the system noise like now? So the noise that I keep hearing is the UPS. However, and I'll drop this I won't drop it in the comments. It's buried in email somewhere. Someone did write a blog post about specifically replacing the fan in the Eaton UPS, which I think is the same model fan as the one in here, with one of those, are they Noctua? I'm trying to remember. I've had Noctua before, but they're basically designed to be quiet fans. So I'm going to be doing that. I'm going to be replacing the fan in there with a quiet one. I need to order that. The goal is to not have the UPS being the noisiest thing in the room. Now, I can hear some fan noise from the PC. It's less than the UPS. But also, whilst I'm recording this, no one can hear any noise, right? So that noise is not going to be picked up by this mic. I would like to have more silence, but often I have music on here as well. So that really, a little bit of fan noise really doesn't bother me. Okay, so that was that. there's a question here. Have you tried EM Editor? It's a wonderful editor notepad. Yes, so I've been using EM Editor probably for about the last 6 months. And the main reason I started using EM Editor, and I did actually buy it as well, tax deduction, is that you can open super huge files and immediately scroll through them. I'd used Notepad++ for years, and that does some things a bit nicer, if I'm honest. But EM Editor is fantastic for that. So, in fact, that's the only editor that I've installed on this machine. I haven't even put Notepad++ back on it, so it's now my default for all of my things. Someone here, did you know back at Philips Lighting, the Philips Hue was more commonly pronounced Huey? Huey? Okay. Someone's made a reference to Noctua here. What headphones do I have? You need good, expensive ones to properly enjoy music. I don't use headphones. I've got Apple AirPods. What are they? The Pro ones? Anyway, the newer ones. These have got issues with them. I've got to return those. The active noise cancelling is just piping through some static. I've got a big old set of Sony ones where if I really have to put them on, I do. But for the most part, none of the video conferencing software I use has any feedback from the speakers through to the mic. I've only had one exception recently. And look, part of this is good mic, doesn't pick up the background noise. Also, I reckon you look kind of stupid when, apologies to everyone there that looks kind of stupid, when you end up on a teleconference somewhere and you got like big headphones on, it's just much less professional. So I don't tend to use those. I do have some Bose QuietComfort active noise cancelling headphones in my travel bag, which of course is not going anywhere. But they're the headphones that I would normally use. So customary says Rodecaster Pro's noise gate cuts out the fan noise from my Dell Optimix. Yeah, okay, I can see that. Active noise cancelling is actively making noise. Yeah, Steve, so the problem I've got with these AirPods is on the right ear, whenever there's any background noise, which can include me breathing or even taking steps, is just a little bit of crackle. Now, if I go into the Apple settings and I turn off active noise cancelling, all of that goes away. So I'm quite sure that's only due to active noise cancelling. And unfortunately, I'm just going to have to try and send these back at some point. But fortunately, they're my backup ones and I have the original set of AirPods here as well. So I do have backup AirPods and I use these multiple times a day. So they are quite important to me. But it's just one of those things where it's like I've got to stop what I'm doing and the productive things and just go and fix something that needs to be fixed. We'll be doing another Zoom meeting soon. Like the ones I did with Scott, we could do that. We could do that at some point. Question here, what kind of chair do you sit in? Just got an Ergo Mesh one and love it. I should have got one sooner. So if you read the blog post, it's a Herman Miller Aeron, which you can just kind of see as I move around to the side, and it is an epic chair. All right, going back to here, someone is actually linking to my Wikipedia page, which is nice of them, talking about all the screens. Someone here says, nice setup, no doubt, but it's a bit of the more money than I know what to do with setup. No, I know what I'd do if I had more money than what I knew what to do with. I'd get a bigger PC, I'd get more RAM, I'd get more power, I'd get a better camera, I'd do a whole bunch of other things. So no, it wasn't that. And I like the way they've got so many tips here. Just get one ultra-wide. I've had three or four monitors before. His setup with another monitor on either side strikes me as borderline, insane, gratuitous. Plus, then you can consider different graphics cards. Yeah, because like getting more graphics cards and like less screens. Live with this. This is awesome. I'm so, so happy with this setup. But I appreciate the uneducated opinions anyway. Mike, he likes a different mic. Webcam. just my Android smartphone with Droid Cam. Mate, it's going to be completely different. It's completely different. Oh, it's even better. With BlueTac and having a bunch of those three-prong PowerPoint electric safety things for my toddler, I've rigged them up. Okay, like this is your setup. You spend less money on it. It works well for you. Good on you. But it's not more money than you know what to do with. And the blog post was really, really clear about the careful decision making. I spent weeks deciding on exactly which things to get in here because they're going to last for so long. What else is in here that's interesting? I'm curious how the Zigbee graph was generated. So if anyone's interested in the Zigbee graph, and just to take a step back, so Zigbee is a wireless protocol which is a low power usage used extensively in things like IoT devices. So I've got lots of little IoT thermometers, for example, one in every room, and they just take one of those CR whatever, flat round batteries. They should last a year or something like that. So I've got all these little Zigbee devices, and then they talk back to a Conbi USB stick. Now, that's a Zigbee sniffer. That integrates into my home assistant. I do have a blog post in progress about this. All of those work really well. The Deacon's home assistant add-on is the one that generates the graph. If you're wondering why you can't find it in Deacon's, like I was wondering, you actually need to enable VNC, and then you VNC into the Deacon's implementation running on your home assistant, which usually sits on a Raspberry Pi, using the Conbi Zigbee sniffer. Simple. This is why I need to write a blog post. There's so many bits to line up. So anyway, the Zigbee graph is out of Deacon's. It bothers me no end that UPSs are rarely specified by their energy capacity. There's another topic. Someone says, having gone ultra-wide, I regret it. It sounds good on paper, but it has proven to be far more hassle than it's worth. The problem is, if you tile windows into two halves, they're a little too big. If you tile them into thirds, they're a little too small. A third is fine for watching video or working on a terminal, but it's too cramped for code. If you split it in halves, I don't understand when it is a problem. So the joy about having a monitor this size is you just make everything the size that you want and you put it where you want. Like it's not, I don't understand the problem with this. Someone else says, even better, rotate one of your three monitors in portrait mode. A lot of people are very, very passionate about portrait mode. Good on you. I'm happy for you. I, with the caveat of I have not tried it, so this is an uneducated opinion, but I struggle a little bit with the idea of having something which then is just a fundamentally different aspect ratio. I do like the fact that at the moment everything is the same height with the same number of vertical pixels, and I can grab a window, like if I grab my task manager window here and I drag it across, everything just works beautifully. Now, I appreciate with the same pixel density and the same resolution, albeit on its side, I could just drag it up like this and then up over there and it would work. But honestly, like I'm just super happy with this layout the way it is. What else is in here? So is there ultra wide? I want to find some more of the epic comments. Someone is pointing to Conbi here in Zigbee. That's a cool setup. Surprised that he went with the pre-built though, given that he clearly weighs all options carefully. I.e. thinks carefully about the HDMI adapter off eBay, but doesn't pick a case that doesn't annoy him. Well, you know, part of the problem at the moment in terms of picking a case that doesn't annoy you is that honestly, until you see the thing, I had no idea that the cover was a pain in the ass to get on and off. The other thing at the moment is that you're not really in a position to just be wandering down to shops and trying covers left, right, and center. Certainly not here. I'd have to go to Brisbane or something like that and COVID, etc. But that cover is going to come off once every few months or something like that. So I'm not actually too worried about that. And again, I explained why in the blog post I went pre-built because I just didn't want to have to think about all this. What does this guy need? Dual Xeons, 120 gigabytes of RAM. We kind of covered that in the comments before. He's better off buying two identical machines for redundancy. Well, I've also got another Xeon laptop here and then another Xeon laptop over there as well. So I got redundancy. Like redundancy is not the problem. If this machine goes kaput as the old one did, I've got machines to roll back to. The whole point of having two dual Xeons is that was where my slider went to in terms of my tolerance for cost and performance. Everyone's an expert. These comments. Seems like the sort of thing that would be better suited to an AWS instance. Let me talk about this briefly because everyone just reckons you just take all the data, you shove it up in the cloud, job done, you do your work there. One of the problems is that to get a high spec SQL instance in the cloud starts to cost money if you run it for very long. Quite a lot of money if you run it for very long. And I have written about this before. I used a really high spec one for a while. And then I ran it for a few hours, job done, no problems. The other thing is that do you want to keep the data there? Because if you want to keep the data there, you have to have the machine and the storage. Well, the storage at least is a machine you can shut down, so you're paying for the storage up there. One of the things I started writing in a blog post years ago that I haven't published yet is that particularly when I was traveling, I would have the databases running locally on my machine, and then I could be on the plane doing work. I remember actually being in the car with a friend of mine in Scotland driving to the Highlands because we're going to whiskey tasting and had no signal. And I was just sitting there for hours working away on the laptop. You know, stuff like that is actually super, super valuable. The other thing is that once you have a machine like this and you have spare disk, it just makes it easy just to have a massive database repository there and process things locally. Also, very often I'll have a situation where someone will say, send me a data breach, and it will be zipped, and I'll download a couple of gigabytes worth of data, extract it out, now it's 5 gigabytes worth of data. I want to do some analysis, so I pull it into SQL Server. I've got 5 gigabytes worth of data. What do I do? Well, I could spin up a VM, and I could go in the cloud, and I could go and pull it into there. It's on the cloud. It's going to have a fast download from wherever I got the data from, then extract it all again, and then load it into another system up there. I don't want to upload the extracted data from here because my up speed is so crap. And it's just like having choices is good. Having the choice to process stuff locally gives me more options than if I didn't have the choice. Someone says maybe just stealth Lenovo marketing. All right, you caught me. You know the bit where I said I'm part of a Lenovo Insiders program and they give me stuff for free, but then I still pay for other stuff? It's not really stealthy. If I was going to be stealthy about it, I wouldn't have mentioned the Lenovo relationship. All right, looking at the comments from it. What kind of chair do you sit in? We covered that one. Is your Windows color scheme light or dark? It's light. I've never really gotten into dark color schemes, but then, of course, you run something like Visual Studio Code, and it is all dark color scheme. So I don't really, I don't know. I know it's the in thing, but my Visual Studio still runs light scheme as well. So there's that. What else we got here? How sharp does 1440p look? Does text look sharp? Look, it doesn't look as sharp as a 4K display, which has how many vertical pixels a 4K display have? A couple of thousand. So I've been looking at a few other machines recently, and you know, when you look at the sharpness of the text, when I first look at it, it's like, wow, that is amazing. That looks super, super cool. But to be honest, using this day in and day out, until you mentioned it, I really hadn't looked at it and gone, oh boy, it would be nice if this text is sharper. And the problem is a trade-off, right? Because you're not going to get an ultra-wide display of this physical dimension and in a pixel density the same as a 4K monitor that might just be a 27-inch monitor. I'm not sure if you can get it at all, or if you can, it's just like crazy, crazy expensive, and we're back to like where your slider is in terms of price tolerance. So my leaning is more towards physical screen real estate and being able to get more things on the screen at once than what it is about being able to fit more pixels in the same space. I don't regret that decision at all, but it depends what you do, right? But honestly, when I look around at all the text here, everything is, let's say, sufficient. Sufficient for my purposes, and then I get to fit a lot of it on the screen, which is important to me. Brisbane is so bad, just have to work out how to bypass Logan. Yeah, look, at the moment, I think just not traveling at all is kind of preferable, and God knows what I'm going to see when I open my phone and check the latest stats. How much storage space do you have on your computers, HDD or SSD? So the machine shipped with, or rather I spec'd it with, let me double check my stats here, a 1 terabyte NVMe SSD for the OS, so that runs there. I've then got another Samsung SSD, which I stole out of, and this is like a 2.5-inch drive, which I stole out of my other machine that I run a whole bunch of my sort of Dropbox and Cloud Sync stuff on, which needs to be fairly quick. That one's a 1/4 terabyte. And then I've got another drive, which is nearly 3 terabytes worth of spinning Rust, which is really just a repository of a lot of stuff that I just dump there and I need to have easy access to. There's another couple of drives left in that machine over there, which I don't really need at the moment. because at the moment I've got 730 gig out of the 1 terabyte free on the primary OS drive. I've got 191 gig free out of the quarter terabyte on the SSD. And I've got, I'm using bang on half of the 3 terabyte drive. And there's a bunch of stuff I'll be able to move off there effectively onto cold storage on a NAS as I finish processing the data. What's your internet speed up and down? Embarrassing. That's what it is. So down, I max out at about 60 megabit down. That is the fastest possible speed I can get in this location via the National Broadband Network here in Australia. Up speed, I can get about 20 megabit. Now, 20 megabit is enough for doing this. The 60 megabit down is enough to have multiple people in the home streaming HD video and this sort of thing. Where I feel it is when there is, let's say there's a 100 gig of data I need to download. That's when I feel it. Because everything just sort of starts to, constrict. Unfortunately, the best I can do here in Australia at the moment, but as shitty as it sounds, it is rarely a problem, very rarely. Burton, do you have legal problems running VMs of unpublic data breaches? Not yet. I hope I don't. There is another massive discussion about that, which I'd really like to do sometime. A lot of which I learned going through the M&A process with Have I Been Pwned last year. There's a comment about New Zealand here. I won't read that. Bastards. All right. Back on Hacker News. I'm almost done here. TLDR, Troy went into a rabbit hole of buying a bunch of high-cost gadgets and accessories that he legitimately needed to get tax deductions. You know, here's the easiest way to get tax deductions. Just keep spending money until you run out of it. And so long as it's business related, you can keep doing that and you will get so many tax deductions. You will also be broke, but you can get a lot of tax deductions. And if you're buying something purely for tax deductions, that is ridiculous. So the way to think about tax deductions, this is my way of thinking at least, is they've got to be things that are actually relevant to helping you earn an income. I don't mind spending money on something if it's going to help me make more money back. That is like literally the definition of investment. In terms of tax, I'm looking at what the net cost of it is. So if I go and buy a new wakeboard, let's go, I've got to do this actually, new wakeboard and new boots. So maybe it's going to be like $1,200. I will have to earn a lot more than $1,200 to afford that because that is a gross amount that I'm going to have to earn and then I'm going to pay my taxes. So I've got to earn $2,000 in order to buy a $1,200 wakeboard and boots. If I go and buy a $1,200 camera, for example, and it is used to do this, which is my livelihood, I've only got to earn $1,200. So you see the difference. Now, the only other thing with tax, and this sort of related to the timing, is that Australia, our financial year ends at the end of June. So 1st of July is new financial year. If I spend this money in the middle of June, I get to get the tax deduction on it 11 months earlier than if I spend it in the middle of July. So a lot of people tend to bring forward expenses that they might have in the near future that are legitimate and necessary, and they bring them forward just before the end of the financial year, which is why I spent a bunch of this in June. Just common sense. Someone says, that due to changes in the home office deduction in 2018, most people can't even do the same for themselves. Well, part of the problem here is that there are other places than America in the world. I'm making this assumption because there's a lot of US-centric comments in here. This is very, very dependent on where you are in the world. It's very, very different. I do have businesses that I run all of my activities under. This is a home office that is rented by a business. There is a perfectly legitimate way of structuring this. This guy says, I'm kind of surprised that Congress critters not focusing on home deductions. This is just going off in a different direction now. Last I checked, in claim for purchasing home office equipment in Australia is $300. So if he's running Have I Been Pwned, probably purchasing through a company with instant asset write-off. It depends on the asset because some stuff, capital purchases, are deductible over a period of time. Other stuff, depending on where the threshold is, and I can't remember, accountants sort that out, some stuff is fully deductible immediately. So it's pretty simple, the way I run things. I do everything that I do through Australian companies. And there's one that does Have I Been Pwned, and there's one that does other things and so on and so forth. And that is the way a lot of people who run businesses structure themselves. So I imagine it would be different if you have an employer and you're an employee and you're buying a computer to use at home and then you do some work stuff on it. Talk to your tax professional about that. All right. Other comments in here. Some other people talking about how good their internet is. I don't need to go and drill into that. I'm moving back from Estonia to Perth next year, and I guess I'll have to give up my 1 gigabit down. So there are NBN plans available that do give you gigabit, but it is dependent on the infrastructure in your location. So we have fiber to the node in my location, and then we have copper from the node into the household. Regardless of all the gigabit plans that are now available, I simply do not have the infrastructure. And the shitty thing about it as well is you can't just call up NBN and go, hey, can you run us some fiber all the way to the home? Or you can't say, when is your fiber going to be run to the... Well, you can, but you won't get an answer. So there's just nothing. I don't know when it will come. And the screwy thing about it as well is that if I go here for a second and I drop off the Wi-Fi and I run a speed test on my 4G, see if it makes a liar out of me now, but I normally get super, super good 4G connections here. All right, it's running 30 millisecond ping. I'm getting 250 megabits. No, still going, 270 megabits. Let's call it 275 megabits a second. So I'm getting about four times the downspeed on here as I am with my wired connection. But we really don't have feasible 4G plans for large volumes of data. Like, I'd easily pull down many hundreds of gigabytes of data a month, even on these speeds, which is a little bit sucky. So to the comment here about it moving back to Perth, you may well get gigabit. It really depends on the NBN infrastructure there. A question here from Good Luck. Do you think the feds are doing a good enough job of taking down the hackers? There hasn't been much news lately. The biggest recent news was WLI, and that was from long ago. Can't be too hard to take them down.
I think
partly it is difficult. I'm really interested to see what happens to whoever was behind the Twitter incidents. That's the sort of thing that's high profile enough that you might actually get some traction there. Plus, there's the ability to do really serious damage if you can start to influence the tweets of very noteworthy people. So that would be interesting to see. I do wonder, you know, people like Shiny Hunters, who I mentioned just before, that's a huge amount of damage that's been done. But we have seen, and sometimes it takes many years, loads of precedents of people getting caught. The person who was behind the Dropbox and LinkedIn data breaches, forget their name. I think they were they from the Czech Republic and then they went on a holiday somewhere and get picked up? Someone will remember. So it does happen, but to be honest, so many of these cases, I think it's a combination of small-time hackers. So, yeah, they do some damage, but for the most part, they're not out there running criminal enterprises. Geographic jurisdictions, they're often finding themselves in other parts of the world beyond the reach of, say, the US and CFAA. There's also the question of actually being found in the first place, because it's not too hard to be smart about your OPSEC, but you keep doing this long enough and people tend to slip up sooner or later. And then, of course, there's also the issue that a lot of these people are legally children. And time and time and time again, we see people that are legally children, so they're going to be hard to charge them as an adult or hard to extradite them in many cases. Or if they're not legally children, they're very young adults. Now, okay, they're an adult, the laws are different, but be that as it may, it's small time and there are a lot of them. And certainly when you go and have a look at some of the hacking forums and you see how many people are on there sharing this data around, you're like, that we're never going to have a situation where all these people get rounded up in one go. So obviously it is hard. Burton, can you upload a short 4K video to YouTube from the camera of a sunrise? Geez, you're not asking for much, are you, mate? Yeah, look, I probably should try and do that sometime. Can I promise to do it in my spare time? It would be nice. Good luck again. Have you talked about the Garmin situation yet? You talked about them paying ransom, but do you think it was ultimately the best decision? So the Garmin one's a bit weird because Garmin was down for quite a while. It's really hard to say if it's the best decision paying ransom because there's this part of you that just wants to decry the whole thing altogether. And incidentally, tie back into this week's sponsor, I did do a free course for Veronis about ransomware, including some precedents of even law enforcement paying ransom. So if you Google Veronis ransomware Troy Hunt, you'll find that course for free. Again, I lament the fact, let's say in the case of Blackboard, I lament that there's a good ROI at times to pay the ransom. And that's the reason I lament it is because I can understand that being me or one of you. You know, imagine you're sitting there and your organization is offline and you have a high degree of confidence that you can fix it by throwing money at the problem, which is just paying the ransom. But it's sucky, and it's incentivizing a criminal enterprise. And depending on where you're at, might also be illegal. So yeah, it's a hard one. All right. Oh, yeah, this was the last one. There's a comment here. Lots of news in the last week or so about the Meow DB deletion. So this was this. Someone can correct me in the comments if I'm wrong, but I did tweet about this the other day. You know what? Let me actually find what I tweeted about, because I referenced Super Troopers. Now, if you've not seen Super Troopers and Meow before, it was quite funny. Where are we? There we go. So I tweeted about this 4 days ago. So the tweet that I picked up on here was, the Meow attack is going through Proton VPN. Not sure how many origin IPs there. From the logs in MongoDB, you can see it drops databases first, then creates new ones with random string dash meow, which is kind of funny to pick up a meow. And just in case anyone's interested in seeing it, I will link you to the tweet. And then as I wrap this up, if you haven't seen it already, in the tweet I do link to the Super Troopers bit. It is hilarious. If you need a good laugh in otherwise sort of depressing times, that might be a good place to start. Okay, so look, I'm going to wrap it up there and go and be a bit productive, because I do have that massive backlog of databases, data breaches, which I need to work through. So thank you for watching this week. If you have any other comments or things you'd like me to cover next week, obviously I'm for the foreseeable future, I'm going to be here in the same place. So please send those through. Thanks, folks. See ya.